Thank you, Adrian. If you tell someone a fact, they might learn it. If you tell someone the truth, hopefully they believe you. If you tell someone a story, that just might live in their hearts and their mind forever. I'm a storyteller. I'm an actor. That's what we do. Stories can change the way we look at the world. They can broaden our focus. They can give us perspective, and they could, you know, inspire us and give us hope. I've got a few stories to tell tonight, and I'm hoping that I bring some real hope and some real change. That's my goal tonight. Americans talk a lot about terrorist attacks, and rightly so. Almost every red-blooded American can recite multiple attacks that have happened not only in our country but around the world over the last, well, let alone the last 10 years, last 30, 40 years, many of them happening right here at home. But let me suggest this to you, that one of the greatest attacks in America was not a terrorist attack by radical Islamists, but an attack perpetrated by our very own Supreme Court. And that was the legalization of abortion. Subsequent to that, there have been 60 million babies slaughtered in the wombs of their mothers. That is more than the entire population of Canada and Australia combined. 60 million. Think of that. I want to put that number into perspective for you. I have another video I want to show you guys right now to really understand what 60 million means. So please play that video.
Right where you are, I just want you to, right there in your seats, just shut your eyes. What you're about to hear are the sounds of metal BBs striking the side of a tin can. For every BB that strikes, it represents 10,000 lives lost in the wars of America's past. 10,000 lives for every BB. This is the reality of what is occurring in your country. The American Revolution. The Civil War. World War I. World War II. The Korean Conflict. The conflict in Vietnam. September 11th and the War on Terror. Since 1973, the War on the Unborn Child.
A little bit incredible to hear. No bomb, no explosion, no physical assault on people can compare to that kind of damage, because it has influenced generations of young people to accept abortion as a reasonable alternative to life. America has been irreparably injured by the very people most responsible to protect it, our government. Government and politics, right? By the way, does anybody know where the word politics came from? Poly is Greek for many, actually, and ticks, of course, are blood-sucking parasites. So, just thought you should know that. I'm privileged to be here, and I do want to send out a special thank you to Poly. I think she took off. She took off. And she brought up, and it is funny. I mean, I had put together this movie with my wife and with another wonderful writer, Dan Gordon, who was the head writer and creator of Highway to Heaven, Michael Landon. And we wrote this movie, and it's called Let There Be Light. Unfortunately, you guys can't see it until a year from now. Just the way it's going to have to be, unfortunately. And we did shoot in Birmingham, Alabama, and I saw that she was from there, and that's how this whole thing came together. I said, you know, she booked me for this a long time ago, and I said, we're coming to Birmingham to film this. And she was great. She was wonderful. She helped us with finding locations and getting a lot of extras because we had a huge scene, much like we got here tonight, and she was fantastic. I am in awe of what CareNet does all across America to remind people the importance of Jesus, of life, and of course of family. I'm honored that you've invited this broken man to speak at your event. I was a broken man, but I have been revived, I've been redeemed, and I most certainly have been reborn. Thank you. The topics I'm going to talk to you about involve stories of war. And yes, I said war because one way or another we are always in some kind of a war, specifically that of good versus evil. And I told you that I was a broken man, so let me tell you a little personal part of my story first, my own personal war. 18 years ago, God touched me right here. I was down in New Zealand filming Hercules. I'd done it for 7 years filming that series. This was near the end of season 5. I was having all kinds of problems with my left arm. My shoulder was killing me, and I kept having these numb feelings in these three fingers, and I couldn't really figure out what it was. I was a jock. I grew up playing football and basketball, and I was doing most of my own stunts on Hercules. So I thought, I blew it off. So I flew back to Los Angeles at the end of season 5 at a big nationwide press tour coming up, because I had a movie that was coming out, my first big budget movie for Universal, and another movie that I was supposed to start for Universal before heading down to do season 6 on Hercules. So I was busy. I was too busy to be sick. But the pain in my shoulder became unbearable, so eventually I had to go see my doctor. He's working on my shoulder. He says, I found something. I found a lump. I'm a little bit concerned about it, and I want to do a biopsy on it. And I said, biopsy? I'm Hercules. But before I did the biopsy, I went to see my chiropractor. And as I lay on my back, and he's working on my shoulder, and he goes, yeah, you got something going on here. I don't know what it is, but something's going on here. I heard a voice inside my head said, don't let him crack your neck. And I thought, it's weird. In 8 years I've been going to this guy, he's never cracked my neck, because I don't like my neck cracked. You can crack anything in my body, leave my neck alone. And he knows that. The voice, louder, more urgent, says, don't let him crack your neck. So I'm arguing with his voice, saying, why? This is so weird, he's never cracked my neck. So why I'm arguing with this voice, the chiropractor unwittingly does the thing that ultimately broke me. He cracked my neck. 3 blood clots loosened from an aneurysm, that lump in my shoulder, and were forcing my neck into my brain, and I suffered 3 strokes. 3 years of hell followed. I had dizziness, nausea, heart palpitations, loss of sight, loss of speech. I had vertigo. I had panic, anxiety attacks. I had migraines. I had this sound in the back of my brain, this humming sound that wouldn't go for 2 years. It stuck back there, just 24 hours a day. I spent the next 4 months learning how to walk again, to balance again. Set aside the physical damage to my body, the psychological side to me is even worse for me, because here I was in my 30s. I was starring in the number one TV show in the world at the time. I was in better shape than I'd ever been in my life, and I'd always been in shape because I'd always worked out. And to have that all taken away in an instant was brutal. And my ego is much as, you know, my psyche is more brutal than anything in my life for me to deal with. And the physical therapy would just wipe me out. The doctors would give me things to do, just these balance exercises would wipe me out. I ended up on the couch most of the days because I couldn't really do anything. And for the first time in my life, I started watching TV. So I was working 18-hour days door to door for 5 years. I didn't have time to watch TV. So I discovered Friends. I discovered Mad About You. Because I wanted to laugh, and trust me, laughter is the best medicine. Because the last thing I wanted to watch was ER and Chicago Hope. It was enough. And the neurologist really didn't offer me a lot of hope. I mean, they just gave me uncertainty. They couldn't really reach a consensus of why my strokes happened and that I wouldn't have them again. So I felt like I was a walking time bomb going around. And I had a few panic anxiety attacks that landed me back in the hospital. So those were fun times. 4 months came and went, and I started doubting my recovery. After nearly dying, and ensuing months of health problems and hardship, I was left with some really tough questions. I started to wrestle with God. By the way, you lose every time when you wrestle with God. You will not win. But I started wrestling with it in His sovereignty, in my faith, in His ultimate goodness. And luckily, I had a strong foundation of faith through my parents. But I also had a strong wife who bolstered my faith. Because Sam, she believed in my ability to overcome. And more importantly, she believed in the strength that I would derive from my successful recovery. She's really responsible for my book that I wrote called True Strength, which is called, the subtitle is My Journey from Hercules to Mere Mortal and How Nearly Dying Saved My Life. It is about finding your inner fortitude to battle through the worst of crises and not let others set your limitations. Sam actually wrote a couple chapters in the book, which she swears are the best chapters in the book. And I really can't argue with her because I think she's right. But she married me when I was at my lowest. You know, for better or worse, she got the worst part first. After the first 4 months of rehab, I went back to New Zealand to start working again on season 6 of Hercules, because work was really how I defined myself. And to tell you the truth, I loved it, and I needed it. And it needed me, because you can't really do a show called Hercules without the guy I've been playing him for 5 years. And as bad as I was still feeling, I really was grateful that Universal wanted to keep the show going in some way, in some form. And it really has offered a light at the end of a very long and dark tunnel for me. See, before my strokes, I've been working those 18-hour days, as I mentioned. So I misspeak when I say I went back to work, because when I went back to work, it was 1 hour a day for those first couple months. We slowly worked it up. After about 8 months, I was up to maybe 4 to 5 hours a day, just anything to sort of keep the show alive. But I still wasn't really seeing the improvement I wanted to see, and I was really unconvinced at my full recovery. But I told myself, you know what, I'm not going to live like this. There's no way. So I started pushing myself harder in my workouts. I did 10 times more than what they wanted me to do. And they would totally wipe me out. But being that jock I told you about, I have that old adage that a lot of people have heard before, no pain, no gain, right? And I had to make my brain push itself. And I knew this was the right road to take. And of course, I prayed. Prayed a lot to God. I was ending each prayer with, thy will be done. Because I was not the one in control here. We're really not. He's the one in control. My wife says God tapped my shoulder to slow me down, that I was burning the candle at both ends. She thinks I was moving way too fast. The miracle is that I did meet my future wife just a year before my strokes, and I really don't know how I would have survived without her constant nagging and her incessant contradictions of my own self-pity and really just her overwhelmingly annoying optimism. Drove me crazy, but she was right. My prolonged recovery from my strokes and the devastation for me was a full-out war into which I was drafted against my will. And I'm happy to report that with God's help and the help of others, I won that war. So now I'm going to talk about another war that had to go through the same sort of things that I had to go through. Civil war, right? It was an undesirable struggle, which required determination, faith, and divine providence to prevail. In 1854, in Ripon, Wisconsin, 17 Christian men gathered together and resolved that slavery did not honor God. I'm sure they also prayed for a miracle, because slavery was at that time a foregone conclusion to be, well, it's accepted by civilized society all over the world at that time. But these stalwart men were up for the challenge. They formed the Republican Party, and just 6 years later, they won the election with a guy named Abraham Lincoln. You heard of him. Their strategy was simple. Stop slavery. That small shift in attitude began to form a question in people's mind. Why stop it? You know, if it isn't bad. Well, come on. People knew intrinsically that slavery was evil. And from there, the hearts of the people are brought to see the truth that slavery dishonors God. Slavery was wrong. Wrongs need to be righted. The country that pulled itself from the sin of slavery did so by returning to the beliefs that formed this great nation, the belief that all men are created equal. Of course, for shareholders, this belief depended only on the definition of man. For Christ, it meant all humans, because He came to set the captives free. It just took civilization a long time to figure out what He meant. As Christianity spread across the globe, captives were freed. Slavery, once simply the norm in every culture, became scarcer. The early 1800s saw England abolish slavery and the slave trade. The U.S. followed a half a century later, but not before an enormous war that cost us 650,000 American lives, more lives than all the wars we've fought since combined. It's the most costly war we've ever fought, and the first war to be fought by one people to free an entirely different group of people. Well, today, as you all know here, because you're all at the front lines, we face a similar wrong. Slavery deprived man, woman, and child of freedom. Abortion deprives human beings of the most basic human right, which is life. In the United States, our courts have given the mother of an unborn baby the responsibility of determining the life inside her, though any good Christian can tell you that it is only God, the Creator, that has such authority. Let me ask you something. When did abortion become a political issue? I'm serious. It's a life and death issue. You can even say that it's a health issue, but really political? I'll tell you why. It's political because its proponents have made it a political issue to shut us all up, to shut up the pastors and the churches, to scare all of us into not discussing the sanctity of life and the one place it should be discussed, which is church. Pastors serve God, not government. Because, folks, it doesn't just end and begin at life, though that's bad enough. The secular humanists that refuse to value life are attacking every Christian, every godly institution that we have. And our capitulation only emboldens them. We need to stand up. We need to stand firm, and we need to be loud. Do not let the secularists and the atheists shut us down. So what is their next agenda? I'll tell you. In my home state, the Socialist Republic of California, I believe they changed their name to. Governor Jerry Brown, I like to call him Governor Moonbeam. He just vetoed a measure to allow terminally ill patients experimental drugs that could prolong their lives, but signed one to permit physicians to kill terminally ill patients. So he supports suicide, but not life-saving alternatives. You know, old people are just so, they're just so inconvenient. By the way, how old is Jerry Brown now anyway? Just kind of curious. He's been there a long time. Look, our government, they assured us that abortion would not be funded or commingled with our tax dollars. Guess what? Studies have shown that abortion is funded from the general pool. There's no segregation. So think about that carefully. You all here, all of you here, support life. You've given your time and effort to save life, but you are currently funding abortion. Everyone is complicit. And the evil of abortion is not confined. It is pervasive. It is now a systematized and bureaucratized evil. And through our laws and now through Obamacare, it is government encouraging citizens to kill each other. It is pregnancy centers like CareNet being forced to counsel abortion as a reasonable option. It is young women, scared women, told that abortion is easy. Like everyone's doing it. You'll have no regrets, and my most favorite is you'll never, ever have to think about it again. This is what our government, our media, are telling these vulnerable women to convince them to commit murder. These women are thus enslaved to the everlasting horror of abortion and the silence that it demands. Look, we are all convicted in the face of such unspeakable evil, but we do not have to succumb to that evil. We cannot simply lie down in the face of the struggle and say they're too strong. The media has all the power. Planned Parenthood is too big. You know what? Those are lies. They're just a bunch of lies. If they were truly pro-choice, well, then the options would be for the biological mother to keep her baby or give it to a loving Christian family that wants it. That is pro-choice. But you know what? We live in an era right now where we want to play God. We want to decide who can live and who can die. We can create life on our own, right? So we don't need God. So I got a little joke about that. Some very brilliant scientists get together. And they figure out a way to create life. So they call on God and say, "Hey, God, if we show you that we can create life, will you just leave us humans alone? God said, sure. All right. They all get together. He said, okay, we're going to start with some dirt. God goes, whoa, 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 whoa. Create your own dirt. I brought up the funding, the founding, I should say, of the Republican Party to give you hope. 17 men decided it was worth the fight, and what a fight that it turned out to be. I mean, it must have seemed so unlikely to them. In fact, they probably thought it was a losing battle, but those 17 dedicated Christian men were morally compelled to take the stand for freedom, no matter the cost. And thanks to them, our country emerged from the clutches of slavery. So it took 17 men to create a revolution for freedom. How many men and women will it take to create a revolution for life? To liberate the enslaved from the culture of death? How many people of character will it take to stand up for the unborn to make a difference? See, back then, those gentlemen and soldiers probably never envisioned that this country would prosper so greatly and become the most powerful nation in the world, and then one day codify into law the right to choose death for a descendant. How incredibly arrogant. It is the arrogance of a power-hungry, elitist, selfish, and racist crowd. And I know a little bit of that kind of person because I played one in a movie called God's Not Dead. Did you guys see that? You did see it, right? I hear that. It's a good movie. I'm going to recommend What If, too. Same writers. People ask me how I prepared for that role of Professor Radisson, the atheist college professor. And I said, wait a minute, wait a minute. There are atheist college professors in America? Really? I am shocked. So what I did, I just thought of a Christian, really, to play this atheist. I thought of a Christian, and I took away all reason and accountability. And I figured I was covered. I actually based them off these atheists that I see on Fox and on CNN. They get so upset, you know. I saw it. There's a nativity scene. A Christmas tree. Oh, my gosh, you know. They get all mad and all angry when their veins are sticking out. And they even form these clubs. And I just, they go to a lot of trouble and spend a lot of money to complain about something they don't believe in. I said, you know, why don't they apply that same sort of energy to the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus? Because they think that's all a myth, too. It's just, I don't know. Look, I don't like broccoli. I don't believe in it. But knock yourself out. Understand this. Pro-choice is in its very essence simple arrogance. The selfishness of the it's my body mentality. Let me tell you something. The human body inside your body has its own heartbeat, has its own blood, has its own bones. The mind-body self-centeredness can be addressed by retelling the story, by changing people's perspective, like those brave men who declared war against slavery. They retold the story to prove that slavery was wrong, and we need to recast our story to show that abortion is evil. My body has to give way to the story of 22 days. In 22 days, into pregnancy, there is an audible heartbeat. I don't know about you, but there's a heartbeat. That means there's a life. A full 80% of women who get the chance, of the 100% of women who get the chance to listen to what's going on inside them, 80% of them, when they hear the heartbeat, change their minds. 80%. That's a huge win. And we need to get the other 20% to join in. And all of you here at CareNet are amazing. You're like this giant aircraft carrier. You are offering support and you're giving strength for those struggling with a stressful pregnancy. You stand on the battlefield of the war on life. This war will, in the words of a far better speaker than I, test whether that nation or any nation so conceived and so dedicated can long endure, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. So how is man created? As a slave? Or with freedom? When is a man created? At birth or in his mother's womb? You see, for me, freedom and abortion are inextricably linked. You know, we're still fighting slavery. It's just that the plantations have morphed into Planned Parenthoods and slave owners into Kermit Gosnells, who have accumulated over 60 million victims, not counting the young women who eventually regret their choices. But let's not forget the descendants of those aborted that never had a chance for a life. because it becomes much bigger than 60 million. I have a video I want to show you guys right now. There's one more. $60 million. Look, after my three strokes, when I was really, really ill, I saw this cranial sacral therapist. If you don't know what that is, I didn't know either. I just wanted any kind of help at all. You know, I was in such a weird state that I was looking for anything to have any kind of relief. His name was Dr. Norrie down there in New Zealand. He was amazingly effective, not just physically, but he was also a very spiritual man. He told me one day, he says, you know, these strokes, Kevin, you have. You have to find a place to find out, to realize that they're a gift. He said, would you spit on a gift? Would you just throw it away? Or would you treat it as is meant to be a gift to improve you? And I know what it's like to receive a gift you don't want. My three strokes. I wanted desperately to send that gift back. I wanted to abort them. A struggle like that can break you. But I found the strength to battle through the worst of that illness, the strength to not blame God, not blame the world, not blame family, not blame you, because that's what we do. When things go wrong, we blame everybody else. But the reality is, you have to go look in that mirror, because that's where the problem is. And I had to find the true strength to not let anyone, including myself, set my limitations. My book is about overcoming, finding acceptance, and being thankful for the most challenging of gifts. And the fight we face today on behalf of all of our unborn brothers and sisters is a gift, because children are a gift. But with abortion, what must God think of those who send his gifts back? And what of a country that demands the right for all of us to do so? And what kinds of blessings do we have the audacity to request in our prayers when we spit on the very gifts that he is giving us? You can clap for that. I am grateful that all of you here involved with CareNet serve in this battle for freedom, even though you've all been drafted without your consent as well. And while I believe abortion is something that could certainly break us and destroy this country, I know that if we do nothing, it most certainly will. Miracles happen. That in 1776, in our Declaration, in 1865, in our Emancipation. We are a very miraculous country. And through your work in support of CareNet, you contribute to the transformation of a desperate country. So let's help to change the hearts and the minds, to change the narrative of the self-serving and power-hungry, to reverse this culture of death that seems to have eclipsed the culture of life on which this nation was founded. We need CareNet to continue its work with the great revival that America will see over the next decade. You are making a huge difference, though at times I know that you feel like your battle seems insurmountable. Not so. I was broken, but then a miracle happened. I was revived, I was redeemed, and I was reborn with a new purpose. And this is the message that I bring to you today, that this is possible for this broken nation as well to be renewed and redeemed from the travesty of abortion. We must believe, against all odds, in the power of healing and the inner true strength of this great country. To overcome, first, we must choose. Then we must fight. And I promise you, then we will win. God bless you. God bless America. Thank you.
Lori's going to take you out.
Okay.
Get you set up.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you. I have one more thing. You can hang out. He grilled me up in his room, and he made a big interview beforehand. I found a Bible passage I thought was perfect for what you guys do, and I'd like to share it with you right now. It's Isaiah chapter 43, verses 18 and 19. Do not call to mind the former things or ponder things of the past. Behold, I will do something new. Now it will spring forth. Will you not be aware of it? I will even make a roadway in the wilderness, rivers in the desert. Because as you step into the Jordan, he will part the waters. As you sign up readers, he will multiply them. He is the author and finisher of your faith, and he is giving you all the increase and expanding your territory as you put your trust in him. Bless you. Thanks, Lord.